Breakfast in criminal law to order. And we have, as usual, a whole bunch of stuff. And we're going to go into a work session at 4:30. Hearing at 4:30. So hopefully we also have some caucus scheduled at 3:30 and a floor session at 4 o'clock. So I'm not making any promises, I guess, on anything, but we'll try to get through as much of this as we possibly can. Let's see. Let me get my bills in order here.
I better be careful. I know where I caught this kid. He's getting back to Jones, maybe in the audience.
Yeah. This is House Bill 2903, and if some people want to speak on this, I believe Senator Kern.
The chairman would help if we had the phone company for me. We can try and expedite it.
That'd be terrific. The more the merrier.
Yeah, Mike.
I don't know who else has signed up.
Michael.
Anybody else want to join Senator Kern's? We need pom poms or no?
This is a case of creative pom
poms. Okay, I believe, incidentally, I think Justice Jones is here, who is the author of the court case that created this bill. So you may want to ask him to come up and provide expert testimony. I don't know, but glad to have you here. If you'd please keep us straight, that's a side of pressure.
Well, we have the, I've just come from the general government subcommittee of the Ways and Means, where we have the Judicial Department budget. So we'll try and make sure that no one steps on anybody's toes. Mr. Chairman, for the record, Grattan Karen, State Senator, District 20. Very briefly, Mr. Wilhelms and I worked together a number of years ago. I don't recall the session, a 1981 session, in order to do something about telephone harassment. I was particularly interested because I had a constituent who was the object of continuous harassment and had no form of relief. She changed her phone number, but over time the person who was harassing her discovered that in various ways and continued the or reinstituted the harassment and found she just had no relief at law. We worked on a measure to address that, which was put in the law, and it, as a result of that court case you referenced, has been set aside. We're back with a bill which your chair is a principal co-sponsor of with Representative McCracken, and I'm here to simply carry out the interest I had in the subject at the beginning, and that is to find a method which will withstand judicial review to give a person who is subjected to this form of continuous pattern of harassment, which can be psychologically very damaging and can be quite harmful, a method to seek and actually obtain relief. That is my interest in the bill. My interest in the subject continues, and I really don't have any argument with the case in point. It's a matter of trying to resolve it within the bounds of constitutional action by this legislature. And with that, maybe the other witnesses have got something to add.
Gary?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Gary Wilhelms, and I am the Director of Legislative Affairs for Pacific Northwest Bell in Oregon. We have worked on obscene and harassing telephone call legislation, I guess, for years, literally. 1981 was the session when we enacted the language that was recently struck down by the Supreme Court. This is an attempt to, once again, rewrite the section of law and, as a matter of fact, add an additional section dealing with the subject. We would strongly support any effort that takes us in the direction of dealing with the subject of obscene or harassing telephone calls. The only concerns that I have are that, and I guess maybe we're giving up on the question of obscene phone calls, unless we can catch them with some of the other language in here. That disappoints me, but I recognize the difficulty. We may be slow learners, but I recognize the difficulty in trying to deal with that subject. The second thing that gives me a little bit of concern is that I am not a legal mind by any means, and I would encourage a thorough legal review by the committee to ensure that there isn't a sleeper in here someplace that's once again going to be taken to the Supreme Court and thrown out. I'd hate to see that happen again. So I would encourage you to give it a good look before you pass it out, but then for sure to pass it out. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Mr. Chairman, members of the subcommittee, I'm Dave Overstreet, representing GTE of the Northwest, and I would just concur with the comments that Mr. Wilhelms has just made. Our company has been very interested in this subject from the beginning, and we also have worked very closely and carefully on this subject. I would also reiterate what Gary said about perhaps a little bit of disappointment in giving up on obscene. It would appear that we're trying to make harassment, I guess is the correct pronunciation, to cover obscene phone calls. And in terms of that, because of the language referenced in Section 3, Subsection B, that refers to publicly insulting each other, even if we had an obscene or harassing phone call, certainly it wouldn't be considered a public insult. And so I guess bottom line is we still have a concern about that. But certainly we are supportive of any effort to try to accomplish something along these lines, and we'll do anything we can to be of help to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, one other thing I want to add, and that you need to put this in terms of the situations which arise for our constituents. The person who brought me this case was a woman. In my investigation of this in 1981, I'm sure the same is true today, most of the targets of this kind of harassment are women. They go through all of the strategies that they can in order to avoid that by a non-published number, by use of only an initial in the listing, or not listing their feminine first name, not putting in the address, all kinds of strategies which are defensive in nature, but which even then don't protect them from becoming a target for harassment by the telephone. And it is we have to be very honest, it on a continuing basis, it is not a incidental thing for a single woman to be called at 1 a.m. and 2 a.m. and 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. or at 2:30 in the afternoon or on weekends, and eventually be denied the use of that communication tool, really denied the use of that, and to be psychologically threatened and intimidated through this kind of activity. And that's really what the target is. It is not an inconsequential issue, and one where we really put people at risk, and we ought to have redress. And that's really what I'm trying to say. And I would concur with the other witnesses. They have a very hard job to do in trying to deal with us, their clients, in these kinds of situations. We need to have them have the tool that they can work with their clients to correct it.
Thank you, gentlemen. I had a conversation with attorney, I can't think of his name right now.
What was it?
Armstrong, who reviewed this, and we're trying to test some of the question out, the constitutionality questions of this. And so I've had a chance to look at this fairly thoroughly. You're always, I think, to respond to Mr. Wilhelm's question about, you know, you hope this isn't something that's not going to go out. Often, no matter how good a job we think we've done, there's always that possibility. But I think we've certainly looked at this in as thorough a manner as possible. I might mention to Mr. Overstreet that I think the question you raised about publicly in Section 3, did you have a concern there about that?
Well, publicly, I recognize is already in the law that that's not a change in the law, but our security people are concerned in that Harassing and obscene telephone calls certainly wouldn't be classified as publicly insulting another person. It would be more in terms of privately insulting a person. Now, I'm not an attorney, a lawyer. I'm not sure if that is a concern that legally we should be concerned with, but that issue has been raised by our people.
Could you just comment? I'll ask Mr. Chandler to comment on that.
Sure. I think if you look at the bill, it's actually Section 2 that relates to telephone harassment. And I believe that the underlying theory that we're going on one is one of trespass, in the sense that you are using someone else's phone, as opposed to Section 3, where I believe we've amended out the subsection E that relates to telephone harassment, and that would just solely relate to intentionally harassing another person.
Okay.
Probably not over the telephone.
Okay. That helps clarify it for me. Thank you.
Senator Kerry?
Mr. Chairman, a question back. You said an attorney, Armstrong, who did it. I'm not sure who did it. You're saying someone did a review for it?
We had a group of attorneys, Mr. Chairman.
Yes, please, go ahead.
Stephen Pfeiffer from the Attorney General's office, who represented the state in this case, was with us. We had Attorney Rex Armstrong, who represented the plaintiffs.
Attorney Armstrong.
And we had myself, Legislative Counsel, and
Mr. Gruber from Legislative Counsel.
Right.
We sat down and tried to pick it apart.
And were
they
you successful?
Sat down and tried to pick it apart, and I understood what they were saying.
And were you successful in that endeavor?
Well,
yes.
I'd have to ask the gentleman back there.
We'll find out from their testimony. Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Let me just interrupt and ask if you have the technology to provide adequate proof so that a case like this could actually be prosecuted. How does the telephone company feel about their capacity to establish? I mean, it seems to me that there would be some real difficult proof problems.
Well, Representative Bauman, I've been involved personally in a few of these cases as a witness and assisting the authorities in gathering information to prosecute. It is difficult. The cases we've been involved in, however, some of them have resulted in convictions. Basically, all the phone companies do is provide information, and then the district attorney and other authorities make use of that information in the courtroom as they see fit. But the information that we provide is basically the fact that the phone connection was made and it went from point so-and-so to point such-and-such at a certain time, and that kind of information. As far as the content of the communication, we have absolutely no way to verify or ascertain what that is.
I hope not. But you do, you can track that information on any telephone, or do you need a special request to do
modern,
it?
Modern technology is such that if you do have an electronic system, and soon most of the equipment in this state will be, it's such that all you need to do is program, it's nothing but a computer, you just program the computer to record the data from particular telephone connections on any given instrument or given line. And so every call coming in to that particular number, it would be recorded as to the date and time that the connection was made. And that verifies that the connection was made from a certain line to another certain line. And that information has held up in court in the past. Mm-hmm.
So if I have a constituent who's having this problem, what I need to tell her to do is first make it clear that the caller is forbidden, and second, call the phone company, and the record will be kept. Is it as easy as that?
Well, I don't know if it's as easy as that or not, but as far as our involvement in the process, if a customer requests that this information be provided, we do work with the authorities. We don't just do it for every request that comes in from every customer. We do work with the authorities, and upon request and agreement, then we do get that information and provide it to the authorities.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Pfeiffer, did you want to... Sorry, I didn't realize you were there earlier. You were...
That's Thank you. I'm Stephen Pfeiffer, Assistant Attorney General, appearing for the Department of Justice. We do support House Bill 2903. I was the losing attorney in State versus Ray, striking down the previous telephone harassment provision. I think everyone involved in that case recognizes that it is possible to do something to prohibit and enforce a statute, prohibit the harassing phone calls in some way within constitutional means, and that's what this statute does. We have thoroughly examined it, and we feel that it does pass constitutional scrutiny. I'd be happy to answer any questions. I just want to make a couple of points before I do that, though. One is to confirm that this is basically a trespass theory, not any type of limitation on the communication itself, simply the fact that someone is using your telephone or causing it to ring, and you have a right to prevent that, especially if it causes harassment or annoyance. Secondly, as far as the enforcement problem, I've been asked by people, well, how do you prove this case? Is it any different from proving the previous telephone harassment, which was difficult for prosecutors but not impossible, as was indicated in the successful prosecution in the Ray case and other cases of the same that were heard also before the Supreme Court? So my response to that would be that the enforcement problem is certainly no worse than it was under the previous statute, that you still have to prove the elements of the crime, and you have to prove that the individual defendant was the one making the phone call. And you do that through testimony from the victim, as well as assistance from the phone company in tracing the telephone call, in some cases the use of voice prints.
The question that I remember we were meeting on this, the question that kept going through my mind is how difficult it would be to bring a charge against something like this. Easier to identify someone if you can see who they are. It's a lot less easy to do that, or much more difficult to do that if you're trying to trace it down through a phone call. And of course, we don't have any record of how this will work because we haven't had an opportunity to legally test it yet. But what's your sense about the ability to actually prosecute under this?
The enforceability of it?
Enforceability, I guess.
As I said, I don't think it's any less enforceable than the previous statute, and I don't know of any way to make it more enforceable as far as identifying the offender, which is what we're talking about. The elements are a lot easier to prove now because all you have to do is cause the phone to ring and have it be answered after having been told not to do it. So if the communicative element of it is out of it, now you still have to prove the intent to harass or annoy, which is usually proved through the words spoken. So in a sense, the words are irrelevant to that because that would show the purpose of the caller.
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Pfeiffer.
Thank you.
Does anyone else wants to be heard on this bill? Not yet, anyway. Just assume. Fine. This is a work session on the bill. I don't believe we had any amendments. Representative Springer?
Mr. Chair, I understand we're in work session. I had hoped to have prepared by work session. Unfortunately, I don't have them, but perhaps... I know we're reluctant to do this conceptually. In the concurring opinion, I noted that it was suggested that there might be an additional remedy similar to the one which we provide in other kinds of cases. For example, in shoplifting, we provide to merchants, because the criminal penalty or sanctions that given our jail overcrowding situation, et cetera, we've given the merchants kind of a self-help remedy in that if a person has committed shoplifting, there's a civil penalty which follows a demand letter. Similarly, I think we provide that for bad checks. I believe Justice Lindy suggested that we may be able, as an additional deterrent, provide a civil penalty that could be imposed as a matter of law in addition to criminal sanctions. And in fact, the civil penalty could be kind of a self-help remedy in that a person could retain a private attorney or would not necessarily require the assistance of law enforcement or the district attorney's office, could in fact perhaps enlist the assistance of the telephone company and their investigators and use that information to pursue, make a written demand, and with that civil penalty, in fact, provide an additional sanction without having to involve the cost of a criminal proceeding, and also enforce that at a lesser standard of proof as opposed to beyond a reasonable doubt. So I appreciate we want to proceed forward today, and I certainly agree with that. And I guess I would ask the subcommittee's indulgence if I could ask the if we could adopt in concept and distribute that amendment as part of our action today. I would like to see that as a part of this bill.
I would support that. That's okay. A good idea.
You don't know where that would be placed in the...
I would think it would probably come as new language.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would hope that we could get it under this relating clause. I'm not absolutely certain of that. I think we may. We'll confer with counsel and before this matter would come to a full committee if we can agree conceptually.
We can convince the chairman of the full committee to accept amendments at the full committee. I'm willing to try that.
I'll speak to him about it.
We can do that. Would you care to make a motion on that?
I would so move conceptually that we provide an additional civil penalty and provision, hopefully drawing upon a parallel language to the civil penalty provisions that now exist in the area of shoplifting and bad checks, whereby a complaining witness could, through our civil justice system, seek a penalty, a civil penalty only, no jail sentence, of course, but a civil penalty, an amount, let's say, not to exceed $1,000 for each offense.
Okay. And counsel can work on getting that language drafted into us before this comes up for the full committee. Okay, Representative Springer moves the conceptual amendment. I don't believe there's any objections to that, so that's so ordered. I chair entertain a motion to move the bill to the committee, full committee, with a new pass. Based on
so move 2903 as amended conceptually to the full committee with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Springer makes that motion. Any discussion on the motion? Clerk call roll.
Bowman?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye. Okay, that's ordered. Thank you.
Chairman, since I've been mentioned, can I speak for a moment?
Certainly, just.
I'm Robert E. Jones, and I'd like to speak only because you've made reference to the case of State versus Henry, Ray. The first thing I want to tell you is that from a personal point of view, I doubt that there's any family that's been harassed by, quote, obscene phone calls more than my own, including death threats. To me and to my wife, and threats of rape, sodomization, and so forth, where we have identified the person who was involved, who turned out to be a suspected killer, and we have probably suffered as much psychic injury as any of your people I've heard describe. From a personal point of view, of course, I favor anything to stop any harassment to me or my family. This bill appears to me to also include the, when I get home from my commute to Lake Oswego, when I sit down on the porch and someone calls me and I have to walk through two rooms to see if I want my rugs cleaned, and I tell them, don't call again. That's very annoying. Do you intend to get into the commercial speech area? Have you considered that?
Just as a fact, we've already, the House passed a bill out on that matter earlier in the session, and I can't think of the bill number on it. But
you've got a pickup. Mm-hmm. The next question I want just to ask you about, I'll make any comment about it. When we sit over there, we would love to say, now this is how you can write a constitutional measure, but we just sit there and clench our teeth. And sometimes we write them and they get thrown out in conference. But I think you should be concerned as to what does the term annoyed mean? And what's annoying to me may not be annoying to you and vice versa. And there's no definition of that or harassment or harassment. And is there anything in this bill that requires psychic injury? That the person actually suffers psychic injury. Can we have the slightest annoyance be actionable? those are the questions I ask you, and I submit them as rhetorical questions with no answers. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you very much. All right. We have the opportunity to do some conceptual amending of this. Perhaps we can broaden that language out, and you may want to take a look at those questions when it comes to full committee.
I think if we have the opportunity to speak to those issues, perhaps in amendment form, we could do that if it appears that the amendments would be of such significance or controversy that it would be necessary to return it to subcommittee. We could do that also, but I think the comments should be received by others who are here today as perhaps a suggestion to work with us. If there are further improvements, we may be able to consider in terms of definitions and precision, which, of course, when we speak of criminal sanctions, that's always our goal.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate those comments. Okay, let's go to House Bill 2550. Democrats here if you wanted to. That's not our problem.
Commercial speech.
Okay, House Bill 2550 actually this is the fingerprinting, the famous fingerprinting bill, which I'm trying to find out what we had. We've had previous testimony and on this, and I believe I have I have some other statements. Sister Linden, going to be available on this, or Mr. Kimmerer, can you? Do you want me to hold this for a minute?
Whatever, someone can't afford a civil tie.
Yeah.
They can be able to take enough funds. I know it's going to take enough.
It's 2551, and I guess we're more concerned about having him here, right? 2551, I want to make sure that he's here for that one. So let's... they are connected. Well, let's go ahead and see what we can move on. 2550, 2551 are both related to each other, and Mr. Lennon is sort of here... We need to have him here, I believe, for that. So I think let's just hold on that for a minute and move to. You want to check and see? Are you here for any other matters? Can you check and see if you can get a sense of where he may be? Then we can go to 2554 and 2555, and we'll set 2550 and 51 over for a minute. And 2555 actually both relate to, pretrial release. And These were bills that were from the Oregon Jail Overcrowding Project. There are some proposed amendments, and I'd just like to ask, if I could, for someone from the Jail Overcrowding Project, and Judge Beatty, if you'd like to come up, see if we can figure out where we're going on these. Anybody else you want to?
Chairman, for the record, I'm Bob Watson, the staff of the Jail Overcrowding Project. We submitted amendments to House Bill 2554, dated April 2, today, responding to issues raised by the Criminal Justice Council about what was an appropriate approach to pretrial release guidelines. As you recall, the original bill had asked the council to develop rules and adopt these rules and bring them to the legislature for making them permanent. And instead, we have made revisions. Instead of a matrix, we're talking about developing standards, and instead of validated risk factors, we're talking about just factors, because of the concerns raised by the council, whether or not data was